This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport and Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch, from BBC Match of the Day magazine. What a show we have for you. You're Newcastle fans, you've tuned in, you already know the story. Beating Chelsea 1-0 in the dying minutes, the dying seconds of the game. 1-0, a clean sheet, 3 points. Well, that is not where the drama ends, because last night on Merseyside, facing Everton, Goodison Park, 2-0, 93 minutes played. Let me paint a little picture. Aaron is watching it on a dodgy stream. Don't worry about that. That is not where this story goes. He gets a text, 2-2, unbelievable. He thinks it's a joke, it's a prank. The stream is behind. 2-2, no, Aaron, it is correct. Unbelievable. Seemingly Newcastle only do drama in the last dying minutes of games. The boys are smiling. What a show we have for you. Not to only talk about those performances, but the 4-point return. Of course, we'll be obviously talking about the January transfer window, Newcastle signing Ben Talab on loan. Who else? Maybe we'll see our very own Ketch. Maybe might have some rumours and some sources for us on that one. We tried with Aaron's sources last week. Absolutely useless. I don't know if he looked at them on a scratch card or saw it on the bottom of a pot noodle. Who knows? But they weren't good. Ketch will win in that department. Then we will be looking at the FA Cup on the weekend, because it is Oxford United going well in League One. But no disrespect, this is a great opportunity for the Magpies to get in that fifth round for the first time since 2006. Well, you know the story of last night, but we want to hear your views anyway. So tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. Ketch, I mean, I want to talk about Chelsea, but really I want to talk about last night. There's so much to talk about. We'll start with Chelsea. Another win at home, another win against the supposed bigger clubs. You beat Spurs 1-0, you beat United 1-0. Now it was Chelsea 1-0. What is going on?
Well, this is Newcastle, Charlie. You know, don't be so surprised. It's a soap opera. You know, there's going to be defeats to Norwich and Villa. There's going to be boycotts and free tickets. And some supporters are going to get hit in the nuts with a corner flag. Anything can and will happen. And it has. And I love it. It's rope-a-dope football. Let them have the possession. Let them tire themselves out. Then hit them hard in the last round. And that's what we did against Chelsea, which was daylight robbery. Should I say, and similar against Everton. We've never in our history scored two injury time goals in the Premier League, and it never seems to happen to us, but it has for two games in a row, and you won't find any Newcastle fan complaining.
Yeah, everyone wants their team to win 4-0, 5-0 and take the 3 points playing attaining football, but there's something that you can just take from when you do snatch a 2-2. We all said before it felt like 3 points last night, but just on that Chelsea game, Ketch saying there, yeah, Chelsea dominated, you know, maybe a bit of robbery from Newcastle, but sometimes it's these games that separate them from the pack at the bottom, because those games, those teams lose or they nick a draw, but Newcastle taking the 3 points, Aaron.
Yeah, 100%. Like Ketch said, that is just Newcastle to a T, especially this season. You know, we always seem to struggle against the lesser teams, but it was the same under Benitez as it is with Bruce. That always seems to be, even against the bigger clubs, they're never really that far out of it, of the game. You know, even last night at 2-0, when that Lejeune one went in, I mean, no one was expecting the equaliser, but it just proves that this team, they never give up, and they've already shown so many times this season that they can steal results when they really don't deserve 3 points.
Yeah, and we spoke about it last week. We was looking at the Chelsea game, doing a preview. I said Chelsea haven't got a great record at St James's Park. That proved correct. In their last seven trips, Chelsea have lost five games. What is it, Ketch, for you, that Newcastle seemingly have Chelsea's number when they do come up to play Newcastle at St James's?
Not too sure. Difficult to put your finger on it. I think with this current Chelsea team, we're seeing a very naive team. So what?
Very young side.
Yeah, young. Mm. And from week to week, one week they're brilliant and they're brushing teams aside, and other weeks they're showing a real naivety and not closing games out and losing to lesser opposition, so called. So That's probably the case. But I don't know. What I think Chelsea fans have every right to moan about the result on Saturday. But Newcastle were extremely hard to break down. They didn't have an answer, Chelsea. They couldn't unlock it. Mm. And then Newcastle, by defending so resolutely, we have put ourselves in a position to get something from the game. So you have to give us credit for that, for staying in the game and then going for it at the end. And it came off.
Yeah, was there any point in when it was getting to that latter stages, was you thinking, Aaron, we could get it here? Were you thinking, I'm happy with this 0-0, I'll take a point? Or did you think, this is there, someone will nick this at the death?
If I'm being completely honest, I thought if either team was going to score, it would be Chelsea, purely because they just dominated the game so much. We were sat so deep, we had so little of the ball. And, I mean, Dubravka pulled us some fantastic saves to keep us in the game, but I didn't expect us to go up the other end and win it. But when, as we've shown this season, when we've got defenders and midfielders that are such a presence from set pieces, getting that corner in the 90th minute, you never know what's going to happen with Newcastle, as they showed again last night with Lejeune. So, I mean, it was a surprise, but like I've said, you can never rule this team out.
Yeah, and obviously we spoke about those wins and obviously spoke about them at home. Since the start of 2019, Ketch, only Liverpool, Man City and Spurs have more Premier League home wins than Newcastle. Newcastle have 11. I don't want to say St James is a fortress, but why is this home form so good at the minute and teams, like you said, finding Newcastle very hard to break down?
I don't know. You probably couldn't say because of the atmosphere, because there's been a third empty for some games. So I don't know. I'm not sure. I think what this team is built on defence. So if we have a fully fit squad, which we haven't had very much this season, I don't know if I've mentioned that, but we've got six amazing centre-halves at the club. So there's a foundation there to build something on.
You say centre-halves / strikers.
Goal-scoring centre-backs. Yeah. This is where we're unique. So there's a really strong spine defence there. Also, there's a core of players there who have been at the club for 3 or 4 years, come down into the Championship with us. They know what it's all about. So when new players come into the squad, you got people like Lascelles, Richie, Hayden, Dummett, who will get into the new players and tell them what the standards are and tell them what the region is about, tell them what the squad is about and explain the complexities of the ownership issue and the fan unrest and say, look, block all that out. This is how we operate as a team. We don't have much of the ball. We can defend and we can beat teams that are better than us just by having a bit of a team spirit.
All right. Well, it was a brilliant 3 points against Chelsea. Obviously, let's look at last night now, because it was Everton. And you're going into that game off the back of that brilliant Chelsea victory, 3 points, a clean sheet. You start poorly against Everton. Another game, and let's be fair, Everton, I don't want to say they were dominating, but they were the better side. 2-0 down, you're thinking, all the shine from Chelsea's gone, Aaron. Before you get back into it, what were you making of the performance before, obviously, the heroics in the dying stages?
I thought we were much worse last night than we were against Chelsea. I thought last night was so poor, just offering nothing going forward, didn't look as solid at the back. And, I mean, 99 times out of 100, Everton or any other team would have seen out that game, and it would have been, you know, the case of Newcastle fans thinking, well, all that positivity from Saturday, the late winner, all the momentum we could have built is gone. And that was what I was obviously thinking for 93 minutes. I mean, I think that last minute, it's not even, that is just surreal. I've never seen anything like it. Two goals in the space of a minute. You know what I mean? There's a screenshot somewhere on social media where the score is 2-0 in the 93rd minute of 94. And you think, how on earth can you say to people, Everton did not win this match? It's just absolutely bonkers.
Well, obviously, a lot was made of another Premier League game last night, Chelsea and Arsenal 2-2, and Chelsea fans in disarray, the Arsenal comeback. But for me and Ketch, we spoke about this before. And as Aaron just said there, 2-0, 93rd minutes at home. Absolute criminal from Everton's side of things. I don't know if they switched off, but our Newcastle have got back into this. This is unheard of. Steve Bruce saying after wacky wacky football game, but it was nonsense, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was chaos really. And the system we finished the game with was absolutely nuts. Mainly right because we didn't have any attacking options on the bench. Our most attacking option on the bench was a lad called Tom Allen, who's an academy player who made his debut in the Rochdale replay. And he didn't even come on the pitch. Bruce has brought three centre-halves on. And I think he finished the game with Almiron up front with a three behind him of Hayden and both Longstaffs. So Everton what's happened is I think it's a concentration issue. They've switched off a bit, but also we've scored from two long balls into the box. Everton's defenders are thinking, who am I marking here? All of a sudden, there's all these extra bodies, all these extra big lads, all these extra guys who are good in the air. The centre-halves are playing further up the pitch, and they're all in the box trying to get something, and they're all over the place, and we've forced an issue. But to go back to what you were saying earlier about the actual performance, it was really, really bad. Mm. I mean, bad as in we had half a shot on target. This isn't a new opinion. We're not very creative in the final third. And the Longstaffs, for as much as we love them and we know they're going to, we're really excited by what they could become, they just wanted a bit too much time on the ball. And it's a tough place to go, Everton. They've spent so much money, and they're being set up now by Ancelotti. That's a very difficult game. But somehow we've come away with a point.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. When you spoke about Dubravka, how good he was against Chelsea, obviously I felt like he could have done better with that first goal from Keane. You know, it sort of went under him, unlucky there. These things happen. But when Newcastle did get that first goal, were either of you thinking, hang on, or if you're being honest, going, just a consolation? Or did, I know, Aaron, you still thought it was 2-0.
If I'm completely honest, when I got told off my friend in the office on his stream that was about 30 seconds ahead of mine that it was 2-1, I thought, well, we've got a consolation. Before I'd even registered the fact we'd got one back, we'd equalised. So there wasn't even time to process what had happened. Before I knew it, it had gone from 2-0 to 2-2. So
I was just buzzing that Pickford's clean sheet bonus had gone.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, Jordan Pickford's little arms, we have to give him credit there. Obviously, still England's number one. But I suppose the big question to take away from this game then, when does Lejeune start up front?
I mean, it's got to be soon, because I mean, last night we had one striker on the pitch and none on the bench. So if Jolton goes, then it's going to be a up front two of Shaw and Lejeune, I think.
He's clinical. Whether he's disposing of dead bodies or dispatching a ball into the net, he is clinical.
It was a brilliantly taken first goal, that overhead kick. Ketch, you mentioned, look, we've got to get used to it, Newcastle. It's a bit of a soap opera. We've seen it all this year. I don't know if we've learnt more about this team in the two games, but I suppose my question is, have we? Because it is a marker of a team, and I know there's always questions on character and desire and grit to get back into it, but beating teams, when you have been outplayed and the other teams dominate possession, yet it's Newcastle who beat Chelsea. It's Newcastle, 2-0 down in the 93rd minute, that come back 2-2. I know we're not going to see this every week. You even said it's the first time Premier League history that Newcastle have got two goals past the 90-minute mark. But what have we learned in these last two games on a positive?
Well, what I'm learning about the manager is he has the exceptional man management skills. And man management isn't something that we as fans or supporters will ever see. That's something that'll go on behind in the background. So he's clearly able to speak to these players as individuals. Look at what happened when Joe Linton got his goal against Rochdale. He steamed over to the touchline to embrace Steve Bruce. There is a relationship there. There's a bond, and Steve Bruce is obviously backing him and saying the right things to him throughout the week to hopefully put him in a position to start scoring. And I'm going to pay him a massive compliment here, Bruce. There's an element of Sir Bobby Robson about the way he speaks to the players. We don't see it, and it's hard for us to give credit because we don't see it, but clearly there's something there that he's able to speak to the players and cultivate this spirit that's getting us up the table.
Yeah, well, I think you found something there. You're completely right in what you're saying. He's definitely an arm round the shoulder manager, you know, giving the players that comfort when they need it. They're all rooting for him. Aaron, is that the same kind of thing that you've learned?
Yeah, 100%. I was thinking it a couple of weeks ago when Almiron started firing, because Almiron in the summer lost a manager that speaks his language, Rondon and Perez, who were two of his closest sort of allies in that dressing room. So for a player coming over, you know, he's Paraguayan, he doesn't know the league, he doesn't really know the language, but Bruce seems to just have this bond with him. He's had, like you said, the same with Joelinton, and like Kes says, we don't see this, fans don't see it, and it hasn't really been picked up on, you know, but I think slowly but surely he must be getting credit for it. And Bruce is obviously renowned for not being big on tactics, as he's admitted, so maybe this is his special bond with the players that is, you know, translating into these results on the pitch.
You say it's tactics, it's new age tactics. As Ketch mentioned, you know, that front three, front four last night. Everyone wants to talk about Chris Wilder. When are they going to start talking about Sir Steve Bruce and how he decides to play in those games? Still so much to unpack from that Everton and Chelsea game, and we will a little bit later. But delighted to say Chris Woff from The Athletic joins us next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Newcastle United Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes and Matt Ketchell, a.k.a. Ketch. Well, we're very excited tonight, obviously talking about last night's 2-2. Could you ever be more positive and excited about a point away from home? I think not. Two late goals for Newcastle, sealing that point at Goodison Park. But delighted to say now, Chris Woff from The Athletic joins us now. And Chris, you was at Goodison Park last night. We're just excited and we wasn't there. What was it like at the very end of the game? I bet it was absolutely chaos.
It was complete chaos. I mean, I still, towards now, 24 hours on, I still can't quite comprehend what happened, if I'm perfectly honest with you. I mean, for 93 and a bit minutes, Newcastle were awful for the vast majority of the game. They really didn't offer a threat at all. Everton were in total control. But then, Florian, the ball goes in the box from the corner, Pickford flaps at it, Shea hits the shot across, and Dejeune with a wonderful overhead kick. And he just, in that moment, Newcastle didn't really celebrate, but you could just feel something change with Everton. Now, I'm not saying at that point I thought, oh, Newcastle are going to go and get an equaliser here. But then they take the kick off, they kick it long, and you're thinking, well, why wouldn't you just keep the ball at that stage? Why, if you're Everton? But they're clearly panicked. And yeah, there was just a massive momentum swing and just pandemonium. The players on the pitch didn't really know what was going on. The referee points to his watch and points to the centre circle, and then obviously the away end is at the far side at Goodison Park. So all of a sudden the Newcastle fans realised the players started running to them, and the noise just erupted, and then there was silence in the home end. It was absolutely incredible. It was really hard to compute what was going on, but in an excellent way from a Newcastle point of view.
Chris, how are you doing? It's Ketch. Good to speak to you.
Good to speak to you as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, as someone who was at the game last night, as you were, I'm intrigued as to what Steve Bruce's reaction was at full time. I've just given him the biggest compliment of his career. I don't know if you heard that, but he seems to be edging closer to the away fans at the end of the game and tentatively dipping his toe in and milking in the applause. How did he get on at the full time of that one?
Yeah, he still hasn't fully gone across. So the away fans were on the far side of the pitch, so he didn't walk all the way across as some of the players did. They went and gave the shirt to the leg of Almiron. I'm sure everyone's seen the video on social media of him giving his shirt to the young girl. But Bruce did walk halfway across the pitch, started to applaud the fans, then clapped and hugged some of the players, and then sort of fist-pumped to the fans on a couple of occasions and did applaud them again. And then, and he got a positive reception back, as you would expect after what had happened in the final, in the last minute of injury time there. So I still don't think it's sort of full embrace from him or from fans, but he does seem to feel now he's edging closer to being able to go and feel that recognition, which is good to see that rapport is starting to build. Hopefully,
he's getting more confident, isn't he?
He is getting more confident, yeah. Which when results are positive, even if, let's be honest, in the last two games, 95%, if not more, of the football has been woeful, but Newcastle have come away with it with 4 points, and so the ends justify the means in that sense, I suppose.
Hi, Chris, it's Aaron here. We've spoke earlier in the show about Newcastle's fantastic home form this season, and obviously there's only a couple of teams in the Premier League that have actually taken more points in the last year at home. What do you put it down to? Because as we've sort of already said, the atmosphere hasn't been as good as in previous years.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because the atmosphere hasn't been as good. I mean, since the 10,000 half-season tickets have been given away, The atmosphere did improve for a couple of games, although obviously there was the Leicester defeat when the atmosphere again tailed off rapidly, as you would expect. But I think that part of it is to do with, because there's almost an acceptance of the way that Newcastle are going to play historically at St James's, you wouldn't have seen, and it wouldn't have been acceptable for a Newcastle team at home to sort of sit deep and try and counter-attack. But there's an acknowledgement, there has been since Newcastle were promoted back to the Premier League, I think, that Newcastle do have to play this way. They are limited and that they are a team. And in the sense that I mean that individually they do lack quality, but collectively they show a heck of a lot together and they will fight for the team. And I think, so because the atmosphere may not necessarily be helping them, but I just think that because it isn't as if Newcastle are approaching it as trying to get on the front foot and trying to play too much, they're still average far less possession than most away sides, and so because they accept what they are, I think that's why they're doing so well, and it can frustrate teams and they do struggle to break them down, because when Newcastle are disciplined and when they do sit defensively, I think that teams except the very, very top teams, I think they do struggle to get through that defensive wall.
Chris, I really enjoyed The Athletic today. You've done a nice informative piece on Ben Taleb, who we're going to be speaking about after the break. And also George has written one of the most vivid descriptions of an away end I think I'll ever read. As George's friend and colleague, how do you think he reacted when the goal went in? Would he have been professional, or would he have been joining in with the scenes?
No, I think he'd have joined in with the scenes. I mean, I spoke to him after the game, and I'd spoken to him before the game, and he'd said, look, I'm going to embrace this for whatever it is. And it was quite funny because I texted him at half time when obviously Newcastle were losing and it had been awful at that stage. And I said, well, at least you're getting the sort of full away day experience for Newcastle, because if it was going well, then that wouldn't be like it is most weeks. But then by the end of the game, he'd experienced those full emotions, and it seemed it was just pot luck that he happened to be there last night when this fantastic event in terms of Newcastle scoring twice late on and getting the draw happened. So it seemed brilliant that. But yeah, he did really embrace it. I don't think that in any way he couldn't have done, because of the jubilant scenes and in the way that he describes it in that piece, where you just sort of get caught up in the moment and almost, I mean, everyone who's been in a weekend will know that it's just limbs flying everywhere, bodies flying everywhere, and he'll fully have embraced that and really have enjoyed that sort of atmosphere, and the journalistic sort of side of him probably will have gone out of the window for a little bit at that stage.
Chris, you've obviously touched on just recently that, you know, you don't feel the tide's completely turned to Bruce yet, and obviously we know he's a bit, you know, he doesn't really want to sort of completely go over the fans yet. Do you think there's anything he can do, you know, or do you think he's always going to be sort of like the Ashley appointment, and that, you know, he's never going to really be embraced as much as Benitez was?
I don't think we will ever be embraced as much as Benitez was, unless hopefully Newcastle do enjoy very much of a cup run. They've got a real opportunity this year. First time Mike Ashley era to get to the fifth round if they were to win against Oxford this weekend, which every time I say that, it really pains me to say that it's taken that long for Newcastle to even think that they can reach that stage of the cup. If he did that, I think that fans would start to accept him more. But I think it's a time thing as well. There's always going to be that perception that he is sort of Ashley's man, and the fact that the way that he's approached this transfer window when Mike Ashley visited was he's been very positive about him in public. He's said, I've been backed by the owner. He said he's always been very supportive. And it's a different way of approaching it to how Benitez did. Benitez was more antagonistic in public. He tried that approach. And so, yeah, I think that there's always going to be some fans who just won't accept him for that very reason. But I do think there's been a mellowing. I do think that the majority of supporters certainly accept that to have got Newcastle to 30 points by this stage, to have got them into the fourth round of the FA Cup with a decent chance of getting into the fifth round, that they acknowledge he has done a good job given the circumstances he came in last summer. And so hopefully it will continue to mellow, but I don't think it will ever get to the stage where there'll be the adoration as there was for Benitez, I say, unless he was to be the person who comes very close or does finally break that trophy drought.
Chris, I assume you did the mix zone after the game last night. I was just wondering what Jordan Pickford's demeanour was. I assume he didn't stop for a chat.
He did not stop for a chat. No, I mean, I didn't ask him, to be fair, but I don't think. But he didn't look like someone who was going to want and stop for a chat. Yeah, there's been a lot. I think there's been a fair bit. I mean, our guy at The Athletic, our Everton correspondent, Paddy's wrote a piece where he was asking for questions from supporters, and there was a lot of supporters who were basically questioning whether Pickford should remain as their number one. He certainly didn't cover himself in much glory last night. For the first goal, came in flat for the corner, and then the second one got caught behind the line after he tried to save the first one. And I mean, there seems to be this with Pickford at Newcastle. He really gets caught up within it. And the first half, when he was in the end, which is just in front of the Newcastle fans, and Newcastle fans obviously all the way through were singing about him, were singing about Sunderland. And he didn't do what he did a couple of years ago, where he turned around and was sort of baiting them or anything like that. But you just know that it does really get to him, and that this game's so important for him from that perspective. And so, yeah, he wasn't someone who was keen to come and have a chat last night.
Chris, earlier on in the show, Ketch said, look, it's Newcastle, it's a soap opera. We never know what we're going to get week to week. But as we are near it, well, we're at the midway point, the second half of the season is upon us. What can we really expect, even though it's hard to see with Newcastle?
Well, you'd like to think the fact that they've got 30 points already, you'd say three wins and they'd almost certainly be safe from this position. They've got a decent run of fixtures coming up in February. Certainly, you'd like to think they're really going to target the FA Cup now. That they hopefully have given themselves that cushion to be able to do so. The league's very tight and they're only, I think, 5 or 6 points off six. They're 7 points ahead of the relegation zone. So it's very tight down there. But they have that breathing space now. They've brought in Nabil Bentaleb. Hopefully they can bring in one or two more signings and just now try and progress the style. Bruce says he wants to do it and he hasn't felt he's been able to so far. We know the squad's limited to a certain degree and so they've been playing this way, which feels unsustainable. So over time, in the next few months, hopefully he can start to change it, get them to play a bit more possession-based, hopefully finally get some of the forwards to start scoring goals because that's the real issue. Find out how they can get something more out of Joe Linton because they've invested so much money in him, they're going to have to make it work. But yeah, I think really the key is that cup run. You would like to think that they could and should win on Saturday and then they need the draw to be kind for them, but they can hopefully target full resources into actually going deep into a cup competition for once.
Yeah, hopefully reaching that fifth round for the first time since 2006. Chris, we really appreciate you coming on and giving us a little bit of your time. Chris Woff there from The Athletic. Always good to talk to him. Check out his articles on The Athletic. Obviously, he was there last night. Unbelievable scenes as he was saying it. But we are going to talk about that Bentaleb signing and who else could be on the way then looking towards Oxford in the FA Cup on the weekend.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
You're listening to the Newcastle United Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star Sport and Matt Ketchell from BBC Match of the Day magazine. We were just talking about those brilliant set of results in the last two games for Newcastle. I'm delighted to be joined by Chris Woff from The Athletic. But it is the January transfer window. It is silly season. We wasn't sure if Newcastle and Steve Bruce will make a signing. They have Ketch. It was Bentaleb who has come in from Schalke. Aaron said, bit of a left field. No one was expecting it. What are you making of it?
Well, it kind of makes sense. He's going to give us a more creative option in midfield. At the minute, all our centre midfielders are kind of battlers. They just run loads and tackle. And I think we need a bit more creativity. We need to get someone on the ball and have a bit more possession. And I think he gives us that. It's low risk, and he's basically on trial for until the summer. So the onus is on him to come and prove that he's worth a Premier League contract again. He comes without any match fitness, from what I can tell. He hasn't played.
He's going to fit right in.
Well, it's going to take time, is what I'm getting at. He hasn't. I think he's played 153 minutes in the reserves, which is the German fourth tier, is what Schalke reserves play in. So it's going to take him. He's not going to come in and instantly set the world alight, I wouldn't think, with that, unless he's been training hard behind the scenes. We don't know. And he's got this temperament. He's been suspended four times by Schalke. He's fallen out with Pochettino. So we need Bruce to wave some of that man management magic and get him on side. But I do think it makes sense. And you know, it's low risk, because if he doesn't do the business, then we just move on in the summer.
Yeah, it's low risk in that sense. But also, if we flip that coin, it's not so much low risk when maybe there is a few temper problems and we don't want him causing any, you know, being a bad apple in the dressing room, you know, and ruining what team spirit we've just spoke about, the one that Newcastle have at the minute, Aaron.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, it is a little bit worrying that he's coming in and he's had all these problems and we're obviously paying all of his wages. Mm. You know, you can also say that centre mid really wasn't a position that was vital that we strengthened. You know, I mean, a lot of people are saying he's finally a replacement for Diarmi. But as Ketch said, you know, it's a trial. He could come in and set the world alight after he's had a couple of games under his belt. Everybody said when St. Maximum came that, you know, he had all these temperament issues and we're yet to see that. So,
And he's now a fan favourite.
Yeah, exactly. And look, Bruce has done it before. You know, he took Hatton Ben Arfa at Hull and obviously, you know, he sort of had a little sort of revival when he fell out of favour at Newcastle. So, look, as Ketch has said, if anyone can do it, then maybe Bruce is the one to get him back and get him enjoying his football again.
Well, absolutely. Well, that signing was left field. Can we expect any more signings? You know, we're not expecting much, but could we see one or two maybe getting over the line before the window closes?
Well, I hope so. We need a striker. And I think what we've learned is that Joe Linton isn't a striker. He's more of a left forward. And we've spent so much money on Joe Linton, we have to persevere with him. We have to give him a chance and we have to try and make that work. So we need a striker, and that's probably the most difficult and most expensive position to fill. So it's not going to be easy, and as a fan, I'm not really holding my breath. There was rumours that we were offered Tosin, and we knocked that back. I'd be interested to see the numbers on that, like the loan fee involved, how much we would have had to pay him, and then the option to buy at the end, because he was expensive and he'd be on big wages, and that's probably what's turned us off the deal. The rumour, we're really short at left back now, because Dummett and Willems in the space of a week are both ruled out for the season. So that's two left-sided defenders out. Richie has just come back from two ankle operations, and as much as we love him and we know how great he is, he could break down if he has to play every game, so we need cover at left back. And the rumour that came out today, which was interesting, according to the Daily Telegraph, is that Danny Rose is a name that's being bandied around. I'd love to see that happen. But I just
would
think
you really?
I'd love to see Danny Rose.
I'm really surprised at that.
He's a northern lad, and I think he needs something fresh to happen in his career. And he's a very honest player, very committed. English, knows the league, vast experience, and he could really, you know, he could do a really good job. Him and St Maximin linking up down the left, or Almiron, depending on
he hasn't
way
been
he
the same
in.
Player for years, though. Literally, honestly, on the Spurs fan show, they would carry him to Newcastle. They can't wait to get rid of him.
He needs a change of scenery.
Yeah,
and I think,
like, his form's been terrible this year, and maybe big parts of last year. I can't believe he still gets in the England side.
Well, he's had personal problems with mental health, which is pretty serious, and that's going to affect.
Yeah.
So I think maybe a change in his career is good, and we'd have him up there because he's a great player, he's experienced. I still think he's got loads to give, but I worry that the numbers will just not make it not work for us, and it's not the type of signing we would make.
Yeah, I mean, Danny Rose, I remember he was linked with Newcastle when Staveley was going to buy the club. He was talked about as one of the targets then. He was talked about in the summer when, you know, Poch clearly didn't want to keep him, so there's clearly interest. But I think, as much as you don't think he's still at that level, I think another club bigger than us would take him. You know, there's talk of him going to Napoli and PSG and stuff like that. And
I think that's all agent talk, though. He the only one, well, you know, on the Spurs fan show, they say why he didn't go, because no one came in for him. The only team that genuinely did come in for him was Watford, and he didn't want to go.
Yeah, well, yeah, that, as Ked said, you know, I think he's been angling for a move back up north anyway for a while. I mean, all that talk years ago, and Poch wanted to swap him for Luke Shaw. I think that was another time where he probably could have gone, and he hasn't. So, I mean, I'd probably take it with a pinch of salt, because, like, I also agree, I don't think the numbers would be there, and it's not a signing we make. So, but like I say, I would take him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, stranger things have happened. Well, Ketch, I know you're across some other signings, and you get to hear it. Aaron tried last week, he failed, so there's not much of a high bar here, Ketch. But what have you heard, if you can share any details?
Well, I broke a rumour last week on Match of the Day Mag.
I hope you're listening, Aaron. This is how you do it, mate.
And it was met with deafening silence. But it's a genuine rumour that I've heard, and it concerns an outgoing. And it was that I'd heard that both Milan clubs were interested in Matty Longstaff. And if you look at the business Inter Milan and AC Milan are doing, it kind of makes sense. They're in for some interesting players. So Inter have signed Ashley Young, and they're probably going to complete on Giroud on a loan deal. Victor Moses is another player they've been linked with. AC Milan were linked with the young lad at Nottingham Forest, Matty Cash, and they've signed Begovic. So they're clearly shopping in the
strange.
Ericsson as well.
Yeah,
the
basement bin in the Premier League aisle, that's where they're shopping. But with Matty Longstaff, the situation is very interesting, because he's still on his £850 a week development contract. I assume they're in talks with his agent, and he can theoretically speak to European clubs now. It's January, his deal is up in the summer. And I don't know this, but I assume his agents have gone at the talks based on what he's done against Man United home and away, and gone in with a massive wage demand. And Mike Ashley and Lee Charnley aren't the type of people to be pushed around like that by agents. They probably said no to that. It could have reached a stalemate, and now the club could be listening to offers. Mm. So it's worrying, because he's a local lad. He's from North Shields. He's finally made it into the first team. And I just worry, I would hope that Lee Charnley isn't using the lad's loyalty to Newcastle against him to try and stiff him on a cheap contract, and his agents probably won't let that go through. So it's at a bit of a stalemate there. And I think if he leaves, I think that affects Sean, who's already had his head turned by Man United and is coming back from an injury. So we've got these two really promising young local midfielders, English, who are showing bags of potential. I just don't want to lose them. I want them to be given the deals they deserve and given the opportunity to fill their potential in black and white.
Yeah, how much of a... Well, it's a big worry and it's a deep concern, Aaron, but when you hear this, and we know a lot of it sometimes probably is agent talk, but Ketch is right. They're allowed to talk to European clubs, so the agent's doing no wrong. You know, let's gauge the interest of here and abroad and see what we can get, see what the market is, because Newcastle, if this is the market, we have to match it, let alone better it. How worry is that, you know, these two are meant to be the face of the franchise for the next 10 years at least, and this is what gets fans back to the stadium. How worry is it then that they could lose not one, but both?
Massive. I mean, how awful it would be for Newcastle fans to see Matty go somewhere like Inter Milan and absolutely flourish and turn into a 50, 60 pound player. And we knew we've let him go because of, you know, politics or agent talks or Charney just not tying up the deal. I mean, it's just so damning that he's had such a good breakthrough in the first team and he still hasn't been snapped. You know, why haven't the club just tied him down? He's still on that deal. Even if you just give him a slightly improved offer and then you just revise the talks later when you know how good he's actually been in his first season. It's just Newcastle in a nutshell and the way it's run. These, like you say, these two lads are the future. You know, we haven't had a proper academy graduate flourish since Andy Carroll. So, yeah, I mean, we've talked about it for the last couple of months ever since we first heard of the Matty Longstaff sort of contract situation, and it still hasn't been resolved, which just says it all.
The transfer window, sometimes when you're Newcastle fans, just a reminder of where we're at.
Yep.
There's not a lot of investment there, and there's a disconnect really between the team who are out scouting, who I think are good, and I think they can identify good players, but there's a disconnect there between that team and Steve Bruce and his backroom of Steves. What they actually need on the pitch... is that really what the scouting team are out to look for? I think the scouting team are out to look for young potential in foreign leagues that we can get on the cheap and sell for a vast transfer fee. But, you know, it's a kind of square pegs in round hole situation. So it's a reminder that Ashley is as reluctant as anyone really to do business in January. So we'll see. But the fact that we've got Bentaleb in, he's exactly what we needed, and we've got that done around about the middle of the month, is encouraging. It now, in we need a left back and we need a striker.
Yeah, one more, and the fans could be a little bit happier. I got to ask Chris what he thought then. Maybe what is the expectation for the second half of the season? Not so much expectation, because Ketch said it, we never know, Aaron. But now that they have got that little bit of breathing space, that little bit of a cushion, and they've got Oxford in the weekend, and we know what a good opportunity is, what are you expecting from January onwards now?
I think last week when I was sat here with Sean, obviously, before the 4 points we've taken, I did sort of say we're still not out of it yet. I'd say now you can maybe start to take the foot off the gas in the league. There's six teams between us. Obviously not completely
taking the foot off,
but it's looking a lot more positive than it did last week. So many teams down there fighting. You know, there's 7 points clear now.
I think, but it can change in a heartbeat.
Of course it can, but I think for Newcastle, no fifth round in the FA Cup since 2006. If there is a chance that we're going to progress all the way, and we know we're safe at 2-3 more wins, I think we're there. And that, so I think that the real positive from the season, I think most fans would take a cup run, even if it meant, you know, 15th in the league.
The biggest game of the season is on Saturday, Oxford at home in the FA Cup. I know we're going to speak to the sports reporter from the Oxford Mail next, James, so I'm interested to speak to him. But that has to be the focus. Otherwise, what's the point? We're not going to win the league. It's unlikely we're going to qualify for Europe. Our best chance of glory in a day out is getting to Wembley, and I think the fans are reacting to the momentum that we've generated since Leicester on New Year's Day, which was a very bad experience. We've gone on a little bit of a run. The momentum's back. We've sold 42,000 tickets for the game on Saturday, and we need to get that game. We need to be in the hat on Monday and see who we get, and we're a couple of games away from a semi-final at Wembley.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a massive game on the weekend, but when it is so big, that little bit of pressure, the expectation, the weight of it all is starting to tell. It is only Wednesday. Huge game. And James Roberts, sports reporter for the Oxford Mail, joins us next to give us the opposition view.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
That's right, it is time for the opposition view on Love Sport. You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Matt Ketchell and Aaron Stokes. It is now time to look at the huge game. We've said it ourselves on the weekend. It is Oxford. Oxford going well in League One. They haven't won since their third round tie against Hartlepool, but they are in the playoff places in League One, and they have already had a Premier League scalp this season, beating West Ham in the League Cup. They may fancy their chances at St James's Park on the weekend, but the man to tell us more, it is James Roberts. James, thank you for joining us now. Big, big tie for Newcastle and Oxford on the weekend. A chance to be in the fifth round. What are you making of the contest?
Hello, guys, first of all. Thanks for having me on. From Oxford's point of view, we're kind of seeing it as a bit of a free hit. I think, you know, you mentioned the attendance earlier, 42,000 overall. That includes more than 3,500 Oxford fans, which could rise to almost four. And, I think Oxford fans are seeing it as well as a great day out, a game that they could potentially spring an upset. I don't think anyone would ever say Oxford are favourites. However, it's one that, you know, the league form and the cup scouts this season has got people dreaming.
James, it's Ketch here. I was actually at the Kassam in 2017 when Oxford beat us last time in the FA Cup. That was probably one of the lowest points of my career as a Newcastle fan, but Oxford thoroughly deserved to win that day. I was wondering if how many players remain from that day, and if that'll prove any source of inspiration for Saturday.
To be honest, it's been pretty much an almost complete overhaul since then. I think off the top of my head, I know there's one Josh Ruffles, Oxford's first choice left back. I don't think he would have started that day. He hadn't quite forced his way into the starting 11 then. But no, it's more. I think if Oxford are going to take confidence from anything, it's the games earlier this season. So yeah, you mentioned the 4-0 victory over West Ham, that they sort of came out, made eight changes, but still sort of blew away a Premier League side. And then the Man City game in the quarterfinals of the League Cup, where they sort of ran them very close, lost 3-1. So I think, well, you know, that's definitely a source of confidence, and you know, fans especially, you know, plenty of people going on Saturday would have been there 3 years ago. They'll probably look at that in a good way, but I think this group of players are probably looking more towards this season's exploit.
Hi, James, it's Aaron here. Obviously, you've touched earlier, Oxford had a fantastic start this season, but in recent games, the wheels have came off a bit. You know, they haven't won in the league since four. What's that bad form sort of been down to?
I think there's a few things. I think they were playing some absolutely fantastic stuff earlier in the season, kind of September, October, went on a record 16-match unbeaten run, I think it was. There's a few things. I think tiredness, the squad has been hit by injuries. There's been a few players, James Henry, who's a top scorer, Matty Taylor, striker on loan from Bristol City, Ben Woodburn, who you probably know of, Liverpool, Loney, who's played a few games for Wales, that they've all been injured, on and off a bit, really. Woodburn has been a long-term absentee. And because of that, there's been a few players that maybe starred earlier in the season that have just, you know, they've had so many games. You know, Oxford have played 26 league games this season, and, you know, probably now about 10-11 in the cups. So people like Tariq Fosu, a winger who scored on Saturday but has sort of looked like he's sort of had tired legs for a few weeks now. And to be honest, it's been a difficult run of games. You know, they played league leaders Rotherham, where they lost, drew at home to Ipswich, drew at a very good Gillingham team who are eight games unbeaten. And, you know, I think the danger from an Oxford perspective is the panic when it comes to something like that. But I think if you look at the season as a whole, you know, the tiredness and the injuries are a major factor right now. But I think hopefully fans will see this as a blip rather than sort of the norm.
Rochdale really nearly tripped us up in the third round, and a 40-year-old striker called Aaron Wilbraham scored. Who's are there any 40-year-olds in your squad, or are there any 16-year-olds? They had a 16-year-old set up a 40-year-old. Is it who could be the story for Oxford on Saturday if it is to go badly for Newcastle?
Not quite the same age range. It is quite a young squad that Oxford have. I think probably one of the stars that you'd probably say is more likely to impress is midfielder Shandon Baptiste. He's 21 years old. Came through Oxford's youth system, although had been at Reading before. I think he joined Oxford sort of 15, 16. And particularly in the games against West Ham and Man City, he looked really, really at home at that level. You know, his touch, sort of speed of thought, and scored an absolute wonder goal against West Ham as well. You know, he's a youngster. He's been watched by clubs in the Championship and I believe a couple in the Premier League. And he's the sort of player that I think, you know, could rise to the occasion. And of course, scored another wonder goal against Hartlepool in the third round. So he'll probably be full of confidence and keen to show what he can do. I think elsewhere, there's a few players that are quite highly rated. I think Jamie Mackie is another interesting one that the name will probably be familiar, former QPR man. And he, to be honest, hasn't done it in terms of scoring props for the season, but he's very much kind of an experienced head in the squad, and you never know, he could roll back the years and grab one on Saturday.
If you're an Oxford fan, are you taking promotion to the Championship this season, or are you taking a run to Wembley in the FA Cup?
I think Oxford fans have been spoiled a bit this season. The run to the quarterfinals of the Carabao Cup was probably more than anyone could have dreamt of. I think promotion at this point, Oxford have now been sort of in and around the top six for the best part of 3 months now. And while, a run to Wembley would be unbelievable, I think you've got to look at this as a very competitive League One sort of scene this season. No team is running away from it. So I think a lot of Oxford fans will think this is the best chance possible. Have a great day out on Saturday at Newcastle. If they can spring an upset, brilliant. But I think promotion is still the main aim, and that's definitely what's coming out of the club as well.
Yeah, well, James, it's a huge one. Either way, you could have a run or you could get that promotion this year in League One. But what is your score prediction for the weekend then?
I'm going to say a battling defeat for Oxford, unfortunately. I think they'll impress. I think Newcastle fans will be quite impressed with the style of play, but I'm going to say a close 2-1 to Newcastle.
Well, you've made, two people in here very, very happy. James, always good to speak to you. James Roberts there, sports reporter for the Oxford Mail. Delighted to get James on. He's saying it'll be a battling performance, but it won't be enough for Oxford. I know you two will take that in a heartbeat, but we know with Newcastle, the game is never, never over. Not just at 2-1, but also at 2-0. So I turn my attention to you, Ketch. We know it's massive. What are you making of the game first?
Well, Bruce his team talk has to be right, boys. This is the FA Cup. This is the only chance we're going to have of getting some silverware. And it would be a real, cherry on the cake for Bruce's first season at the club if he can get us to Wembley. Even the semi-final would be amazing. So with that in mind, I'm going to go with a narrow Newcastle win. Jamal Lascelles' last-minute overhead kick to win it.
Absolutely love it. I can imagine the scenes already. Be another big, big win. Aaron, what are you making of it?
I think I'm going to go a bit more cutthroat. I think I'm going to go 3-0. St. Maximin score. Joe Linton score again. Love scoring in the FA Cup. And yeah, well, I'll tell you what, we'll have defender. We'll have Lejeune.
Still no strikers scoring. Unbelievably, we've had a tweet into the studio, this time from Liz Roberts, saying, great to hear James giving the Oxford opposition view, doing our supporters proud, but ahead of Saturday, we're getting to the fifth round and we're going to be enjoying it all over again, just like that winning 17 catch. Mm. The Oxford fans coming on this show.
Flashbacks of being in Frankie and Benny's outside the Kassam Stadium. Happy memories.
I can picture it now. Unbelievable stuff. But it is so important. And we asked there, Aaron sang Newcastle was safe. We know we need 2-3 more wins. But we said to Oxford, promotion or FA Cup, and obviously we know what Newcastle are doing, but if you could just have maybe a bit more hit and miss form for the rest of the year, but go deep in the FA Cup, you take it, Ketch.
Oh, absolutely. We're long overdue Wembley appearance and a chance to have a tilt at a cup. I've watched smaller clubs enjoy days out at Wembley, win at Wembley, and even to get there in a semi-final would be amazing. To have half the stadium bathed in black and white singing tune songs, that is, I've been there as in a working capacity as a sports reporter. It's allowed two sets of fans who really want to get to the final. A semi-final would be amazing for us. I think if we could get there, I think the atmosphere would be enough to get us over the line and into a final again.
Oh, it's just when someone else says it just starts to feel real. You just start to pinch yourself. I cannot wait. Either way, we will be here at the same time as we are every week, every Wednesday, 7 to 8 on Love Sport Radio, to deliver, hopefully, a message of who Newcastle get in the fifth round, and we'll be talking all about that. We will see you next week. This has been me, Charlie Hawkins, with Matt Ketchell and Aaron Stokes on the Newcastle United Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.